Today we do it. Today we finish it. We finish our journey into understanding Harry Potter and his secret agenda to manipulate your mind, to deceive the masses, to perform and conduct the great work, the work that's so great that you can't know the secrets, you can't know the initiation rites, you can't understand their true god, Lucifer. So today we'll conclude this journey, and as you already know, I'm your host, Isaac, and you surely already listened to parts one and part two of the Harry Potter analysis. If you have not, you must do so. You must listen to part one and two because we took a journey. We learned about the occult religion and its basis, its foundation in Harry Potter's world. We talked about H.P. Blavatsky, not to be confused with Harry Potter H.P. Blavatsky, as I would call him. She was, of course, the founder of Theosophy, the one that decided it was time to reveal the truth to the masses. Then we talked in part two about alchemy, a central tenet to this occult world of Harry Potter's, the reconciliation of opposites, the great work. We talked about polarity, duality concepts, the Baphomet, if you will, and the revelation of the Deathly Hallows symbol and where it really comes from, because that element of this whole thing supports this concept we've been looking at of entertainment and the occult speaking to us on a subconscious level, because that's what old J.K. Rowling told us directly. She said it right to your face, that the symbol comes from the Freemasons, spoke to her subconsciously, and then she in turn shoved it in your mind to talk to the subconscious, because that's where the communication lies for all the symbolism, all of the all-seeing eyes and the triangles. That's what it's all about. Your boy Carl Jung, the Gnostic, was the one that broke that stuff wide open. Now today, we're about to bust it wide open too. In part three, we're going to conclude this journey. We're going to talk about Hermes, Trismegistus, as it were, Lucifer, Crowley, Minerva, Draco, the all-stars of the occult. And then we're going to wrap it up with the conclusion to Harry Potter's journey and yours alike. Apotheosis of Harry Potter, he is the new god, the god of the new age, the crown and conquering child that Crowley so desperately wanted. So, without further ado, let's get into it. First, I want to start by talking about old Professor Albus Dumbledore. He's the Greybeard, of course, much like you see with Gandalf in Lord of the Rings. He's the Greybeard of wisdom. He guides Harry Potter through his journey from childhood to occult god. He is the prime source of light or Kabbalistic wisdom in this tale, where Potter is, of course, the Gnostic savior, destined to die and be reborn in order to defeat the Dark Lord. And if you look at the root of his last name, Dumb, it means don't speak. So, of course, he doesn't speak unless the hero needs it, unless the hero needs the guidance. This is all hero's journey stuff, Joseph Campbell, hero with a thousand faces. I talked about this in my Star Wars book, The Star Wars Conspiracy. Get it now on Amazon or Audible. I assume you've already got a working knowledge of it, but basically know that this is an archetype being employed in the storyline. And in this case, Dumbledore is, of course, the Hermes of the tale, the spiritual advisor, doling out the wisdom on a need-to-know basis. And all these other losers did not need to know, only Mr. Harry Potter. And if you look in the book, in The Sorcerer's Stone, there was a very curious quote. I'm going to read it to you. It goes a little something like this. Quote, "To one as young as you, I'm sure it seems incredible, but to Nicholas and Perenal, And there he's talking about the Flamels, the founders of alchemy, or the, not the founders, excuse me. I talked about this in part two, Nicholas and Perenelle. P-E-R-E-N-E-L-L-E. You say it. I don't know how to say it. but they were one of the alchemical thought leaders and supposedly were able to successfully transform lead into gold, and they had much riches, as I talked about in part two. Okay, let me take it from the top. To one as young as you, I'm sure it seems incredible, but Nicholas and what's-her-name, it really is like going to bed after a very, very long day. After all, to the well-organized mind, death is but the next great adventure. Wow, man, he's talking to a kid, talking about death. It's not so bad. It's the next great adventure. Now, where have you heard this before? You heard this from Aleister Crowley in Liber 451. Quote, "The most favorable death is that occurring during the orgasm and is called mors justi." Crowley said that death is the greatest orgasm. Sensational, I know. But you'll understand more when we talk about apotheosis. Now, the going back to the Hermes stuff with Dumbledore, the Hermit tarot card, made famous by Led Zeppelin, the old man on the cliff with the light. It's a gray beard holding the lantern. And what does that represent? Well, it represents wisdom through enlightenment. Thus, his first name is Albus, which is Latin for light, the white light. So he is the wisdom of the light, the illuminated one. And with support from theorists well before my time, like Bill Cooper, there has been a strong case laid out for this idea that wisdom is, of course, attributed to Lucifer, the real god of the occult. Now, I had a guest on my podcast named Robert Sullivan several months ago. Freemason, of course. Make of that what you will. He seemed like a nice guy. But Mr. Sullivan wrote a couple of great books that I actually recommend, Cinema Symbolism 1 and 2. And in the second one, called Cinema Symbolism 2, More Esoteric Imagery in Popular Movies, goes into Harry Potter. And it reveals that Hermes is the god of Gnosis and enlightenment. And his female consort is Minerva, the goddess of wisdom. Curious enough, we see Minerva show up in Harry Potter's world. Who is she? Well, she's a shape-shifting owl professor. And she's related to the education of the mystery school of Hogwarts, just like the real pagan Minerva goddess. So this owl is appropriate for her. And it's also seen at Bohemian Grove in the form of a giant owl statue that these elites gather around annually to sacrifice children, in effigy, of course, during the cremation of care ceremony. Again, we see the concept of the goddess of wisdom being used as a smokescreen for potential Luciferian worship. Speaking of Lucifer, we need to point to several examples of symbolism in the saga that points to this bearer of light. First, obviously, the face tat that our little SoundCloud rapper Harry Potter has on his face of the lightning bolt. It represents Lucifer because the Bible says that he, the fallen angel, fell like lightning from the heavens after being defiant to God. He was, of course, the brazen serpent. And in the first book of Harry Potter, there's talk about these shooting stars all over Britain that happened when Harry Potter was born. And these, of course, represent fallen angels. And, of course, the star is a pentagram, again, the same symbolism. And you also, and once you get a tuned-in ear for this, you can kind of catch little things here and there in the books, like there's the idea of the antinomian attitude, the idea of the contrarian, the adversary, which is, of course, archetypes of Lucifer. When Harry Potter's aunt and uncle hate how much Harry talks about this flying motorcycle and anything that does not conform to the rules. Because that's what they're setting up in this story. The muggles, the normal folks. They are to be loathed and despised for their closed-mindedness. And the magicians, the adversaries, are the true heroes, the anti-hero, the dark hero. Now, the reader is sympathizing, in effect, with the rebel angel himself, especially when you hear a man in the wand shop, Oliver's wand shop, he talks about Voldemort, and he says he did great things, terrible, yes, but great. That's in the book. Because Voldemort's the bad guy, remember? He's the one that killed Harry's parents. He did great things, terrible, yes, but great. Now, I'd also be remiss if I didn't discuss the character named after the Dark Lord himself. Lucius Malfoy is the opposition figure to Harry Potter, and of course he is aligned with the dark side. And of course they call Voldemort the Dark Lord as well. Read Peter Levens' book on the Dark Lord to get an idea around this whole idea of this archetype they're trying to call upon. Now, the moral ambiguity is also depicted in Order of the Phoenix when Sirius Black, talked about his tattoos on the first episode, he explains to Harry Potter that we have good and evil inside all of us. We hear the same idea presented in Half-Blood Prince when the professor talks about how there's no light without the dark, referring to how Tom Riddle was in fact employed into the dark arts.
Yes. What was this rare piece of magic?
Well, I don't know. I can't remember the name exactly. But it just got me wondering, are there some kinds of magic you're not allowed to teach us?
I'm potions master, Harry. I think your questions better be posed to Professor Snape.
Yes. He and I don't exactly see eye to eye, sir. What I mean to say is, well, he's not like you. You might misunderstand.
Yes. Well, there can be no light without the dark. And so it is with magic. Myself, I strive to live within the light. I suggest you do the same.
Is that what you told Tom Riddle, sir, when he came asking questions?
Now, Sirius Black also has a family tree in the movies, and you can see that he has a relative by the name of Abraxas. Well, what does that mean? Abraxas is, of course, a pagan god, a Gnostic demon. Another character in the Potterverse is Draco Malfoy, and his grandfather was actually named Abraxas Malfoy, and I don't know if that is the same one on the family tree of Sirius Black. Just found it curious, because this Abraxas deity is also more commonly known as the logo on Starbucks, on the cups. Abraxas also appears in Carl Jung's teachings of differentiation and individuation, which, again, this is a process Harry Potter goes through to become the new god. And if you read his 1916 book, Seven Sermons to the Dead, you hear that Abraxas is, in fact, a representation of the driving force of individuation, with the figures for the driving forces of differentiation, such as Helios and the devil. Now, family bloodlines, they play an important role in the Potterverse. Why not, right? Talked about the Illuminati bloodlines a few weeks ago. After all, nobody knows more about the importance of genetic superiority than who? The Illuminati. As it turns out, Harry Potter is an orphan because Voldemort, the Dark Lord, killed his parents, James and Lily, when he was an infant. And going a little bit deeper, not so ironically, they were killed on October 31st. A very famous ritual sacrifice day for pagan history, known as Samhain. And these parents, they were blown up, just like the real-life occult magician Jack Parsons. Now, Voldemort, he tried to kill Harry Potter, but could not. Why? Because Harry Potter is the Messiah. So instead of Harry Potter facing the same fate as his parents, got the lightning bolt face tat, which officially happens when one gets too close to evil. So you've got Harry Potter's parents defying Voldemort three times and then went into exile. And that's when the prophecy was made that suggested that Voldemort would, in fact, kill Harry. This is, in fact, a mockery of the story of Jesus Christ. Again, pushing the new God of the New Age, replacing Jesus Christ with Harry Potter. Blasphemous indeed. Now, it should also be noted that Harry's mother's name was Lily, of course, a play on Lilith, considered a demon succubus. That is, unless one gets into the occult belief systems, which suggest Lilith is actually the first mother and a goddess, not a demon succubus. Now, Crowley and other groups, they consider Lilith to be the goddess worthy of adoration. She is symbolized by the owl Minerva, again, goddess of wisdom, referring back to the Luciferian concepts of enlightenment through demonic entities. That's why they're channeling these entities, these aliens. It's all the same thing. I was recently on Tinfoil Hat talking about Skinwalker Ranch. Check it out, Tinfoil Hat podcast. And that was part of the concept there, is to talk about these ghosts, these demons, these entities. They're all fallen angels. One more note, since we are in fact talking about Crowley, he's given a shout out through a character named Alistair Moody. Clearly a reference to Alistair Crowley. Alistair Moody. He's also got an eye patch in the film, a reference to the all-seeing eye, you know, the opening of the pineal gland, again, another symbol for the wisdom. One last idea before we get to the apotheosis concept, the culmination of this whole thing. You got to look at these themes of the dead parents. It runs rampant in these children's stories, and of course, Harry Potter couldn't be spared from it either. I've talked about this many times. Separation from the parents is an archetypal event. I discussed it in the Star Wars conspiracy book, available on Amazon and Audible. I'm just going to read you the passage so you don't have to go buy the book, okay? I'm trying to be your friend here. Quote, "One of the steps necessary to take us down this path is the destruction of the family unit. We witnessed this in Star Wars as well as many Disney tales. All of these tales depict children without parents. Sometimes the children witness the death of their parents, as Harry Potter did. Other times they've been absent for a long period of time. An example would be in Episode 2 when Jango Fett is beheaded by Mace Windu in front of his son Boba Fett. In Episode 6, oh boy, I'm doing Roman numerals on the fly here, folks. Episode 6, we watch a sad Ewok witness the passing of his own father. A more explicit example is in Episode 6 when Obi-Wan Kenobi instructs Luke to actually kill his own father. Either way, their exclusion is done on purpose. I believe it is done in order to traumatize the character or the actual children watching the film. These tragedies condition the victim to drop their resistance and cooperate with this blurred version of reality and fantasy. Kathy O'Brien details her time as a victim of this exact practice in her book Transformation of America, where they forced her to watch The Wizard of Oz and Alice in Wonderland. These films were utilized by her mind control handlers in order to disrupt her grasp of reality and allow them to continue their ritualistic abuse. We also see Anakin Skywalker removed from his home as a young boy in order to prepare him to become a Jedi Knight Warrior. He is separated from his mother, only to reunite with her as she takes her final breaths several years later. This was foreshadowed in Episode 1 when Yoda tells Anakin that fear is the path to the dark side and the fear of losing his mother would lead to anger, hate, and suffering. Yoda's ominous last words to Anakin at the council meeting are, I sense much fear in you. The traumatic death separation is further reinforced when in Episode 3, we witness the death of Padme, the mother to Anakin's children. It's not a safe place to be a parent in a Disney show, okay? We also saw traumatic mortality considerations in Episode 7 when the Supreme Leader tells Kylo Ren that he must kill his father, Han Solo, which he eventually fulfills, showing the power of the mind control the handlers have over their subjugates. This same concept is demonstrated in the Harry Potter stories, where children are taken to a school that teaches them the same supernatural powers of the occult we've spoken of already. Alchemy, levitation, divination, genetic abilities, etc. Again, we see the concept of light arts and dark arts in these stories. And I wrote that a few years ago. That was in my book, The Star Wars Conspiracy. And I was on the pulse of Harry Potter, but I was not well informed enough to provide an analysis. Thus, you are listening to the analysis right now. So, we see all these concepts come full circle for Harry Potter when he must go on the voyage of occult self-discovery before his final purpose is fulfilled, which is apotheosis.
Apotheosis. Yes, indeed. We made it. We made it. After hours of me rambling about this apotheosis, we have made it to the end of the journey for Harry Potter. And you, the viewer, the listener, the audience. Now, Harry Potter, he had one purpose, of course, the Messiah of the story. And like any good Messiah, we've got some death and rebirth. And we'll get hints of the Messiah throughout the film. Like old Draco's tattoo of the skull with the Ouroboros. We know what this symbolizes. It means life and death as a repeating cycle, implying there is a way of avoiding death and becoming an ascended master, because that Ouroboros is, of course, the snake eating its own tail. Immortality, as it were. But earlier, we spoke of Helena Blavatsky, and she was the one from, go back to 1875, she claimed she was making contact with adepts from Tibet, known as the Integrated Ascended Masters. Of course, these were all these entities and spirits whispering in her ear, much like Crowley's AWAS whispered in his ear. These entities, they bestowed the secret teachings from the occult to her, and she was tasked with teaching these secrets to the masses. Does that sound familiar? Yes, it does. Yes, it does. This was very significant for the occultists because she, believe it or not, was the first to break the vow of silence and share the secret teachings through her establishment called the Theosophical Society, much like the students at Hogwarts, who were instructed to never perform the magic in front of the Muggles because they had the something akin to the vow of silence, right? Those Muggles are supposed to hear the message of the Theosophical Society and be initiated. Only when ready, though, right? Because the occultists, they keep this vow of silence. The secret teachings are only kept to those deemed worthy. Not the dumb Muggles, right? They're not ready for that. Now, another subtle cue is the theme of Christian sacrifice on the cross. Some people would say that the cross is merely a reference to Saturn, because it is, in fact, when looked upon as a three-dimensional cube unfolded, you could argue that the cross looks like that. But in the Harry Potter story, the students have to get to their train. And how do they do that? Well, they walk through an invisible door, an invisible pillar, at a place called the King's Cross Station. Now, the King's Cross is obviously a reference to Jesus as Christ, the King. And you'll notice that these children are also informed to run from Platform 9 towards Platform 10 at precisely 11 a.m. on September 1st. Now, without sounding overly suspicious, but you came here for the paranoia, so I'm going to give it to you. I would suggest that the movement from 9, Platform 9, to 11 a.m. in September is done on purpose. Why do I say that? Well, you look to Freemason author William Westcott, and he'll tell you that the number 10 is considered perfect, while 11 is sinful. And Crowley tells us that 11 is the number of magic and the new aeon. And again, when you consider that Crowley added a K to the term magic, M-A-G-I-C, K is, of course, the 11th letter, and that's why it's attached to that word. And if you look at a book titled Wicca and Witchcraft, it professes that Pythagoras himself listed the number 11 as the archetype of the spiritual messenger and illumination. Pythagoras, of course, the true OG of secret societies, starting the first secret society around, 500 BC. Now, we have a recreation of the 9/11 mass ritual event in the Potterverse, where the initiated magicians are illuminated at 11 a.m., running from Platform 9, skipping Platform 10, to transcend into Hogwarts. The Twin Towers, they were considered the Pillar of Hermes, again a reference to Dumbledore, and they were considered the symbolic boundary between this world and the next. So, 9/11 as a mass ritual opened up the gateway in much the same method Harry Potter pierces the veil from this world to the next. One more consideration. I'm getting very theatrical on you, aren't I? You're not ready for that. I'm not ready for that. One more consideration. Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix. There is a thing called the Rule 119, and that was the final and last decree made by Cornelius Pack My Fudge, which made Dolores Umbridge the headmistress of Hogwarts. And shout out, someone listened to the first episode and sent me a screenshot of Rule 119. Shout out to you. I'm very sorry I don't have your name handy. But yes, indeed, you were on the right path. Rule 119, the inverse of 9-1-1. Indeed. So apotheosis, this is the term for a man becoming a perfected god, which is what Harry Potter is sent to Hogwarts to fulfill. And in the final two movies, the first of the two is called Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 1, we learn about the secret society known as the Order of the Phoenix. And I would argue that this secret society was formed to establish the Phoenix, a perfected alchemically processed man to become God, which of course is Harry Potter himself. Yes, indeed. His parents were a member of the Order. Thus, he is to be the Phoenix, fulfilling the prophecies. We also learn that Voldemort's wand is the twin of Harry Potter's, meaning it's made from the same wood, which is the Holy Wood, which casts the spell over the masses in the same manner as the film industry. And Voldemort also talks about the abomination of mixing the blood of a muggle with that of pure magical blood, very similar to the purified bloodline talk of the Helena Blavatsky Aryan race. Going to the second film, Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2, we find out that Harry must, in fact, die. He must die. That's the prophecy. Because why? Well, Voldemort, the Dark Lord's spirit is within him. That's what they've been saying. That's what the polarity duality talk was when they keep grooming Harry to be like, well, you know, good's not so bad and bad's not so good and blah, blah, blah. Because he is part evil. And Voldemort's spirit is within Harry Potter. He has the dark side, as we saw from Star Wars. Now, this is not only a reference to an actual death, but also the ego death that many practitioners of the occult must take part of before they ascend and become the Ascended Master. This is depicted in a guy named Alejandro Hodorowski's The Holy Mountain. Shout out my boy Hot Rod on this one. Hodorowski's got some very weird films. But if you watch The Holy Mountain, you will see that the initiates burn their bodies in a ritualistic fashion, because that is the death of the ego before they ascend the Holy Mountain. And you've seen that priest from the Church of Satan, Marilyn Manson, emulate the Holy Mountain in his art. If you know what to look for, you can see it. Because it's all the same stuff, over and over and over. Worshipping Satan, pretending it's not. But anyway, Harry Potter, he has to die. Oh, and by the way, I mean, how weird is it that Star Wars has a very similar tale to Harry Potter, right? With the talk of the duality of the balancing the forces and all that stuff. Because it all goes back to the most ancient religion of all. The one of the occult, worshipping Lucifer, Now, Harry Potter, he has to die, and he goes to King's Cross, of course. Of course, he goes to the King's Cross and speaks to Dumbledore, Hermes, right, in this purgatory-esque place. And here's yet another Christian element where the Messiah fulfills the prophecy, just like Neo from The Matrix. And Harry Potter is visited by not just Dumbledore, but many of the Ascended Masters who tell him about death and his mission, his prophecy to defeat it.
And exactly where are we?
I was going to ask you that. Where would you say that we are?
Well, it looks like King's Cross Station. Only cleaner. And without all the trains.
King's Cross, is that right? This is, as they say, your party. I expect you now realize that you and Voldemort have been connected by something other than fate since that night in Godric's Hollow all those years ago.
So it's true then, sir. A part of him lives within me, doesn't it?
Did. It was just destroyed many moments ago by none other than Voldemort himself. You were the Horcrux he never meant to make, Harry.
And by the way, before I forget, old J.K. Rowling actually said there's a lot of Christian elements in the tale. So chew on that for a bit. I mean, does that mean we discount all of these things I've been talking about? Maybe. That's up to you to decide. I, on the other hand, don't buy it. I think that she was influenced by the Freemason compass and square. And much like the Freemasons who tell you there's no religious element or requirement in their secret society, you refer to hundreds of pages, Manly P. Hall, and all these Albert Pike, Eliphas Levi, and Aleister Crowley was a Freemason. I mean, all these Freemasons are ultimately worshiping Lucifer, and there is a very, very good argument to consider that their god is, in fact, Lucifer. So, but hey, I'm throwing all of it at you, and you can decide what path you take. Now, in order for, I just know that, like, if this was supposed to promote Christianity, it sure had a funny way of doing it, by promoting all of these pagan, occult, ritualistic, alchemical processes, all these things that the church was very, very busy trying to shut down in the Middle Ages there, in the Dark Ages. Because science is based on the occult. And that's where the worlds collide, between science and Christianity. Anyhow, back to Harry Potter. In order to prepare for his death and rebirth, he must find a thing called the Resurrection Stone. If you recall, that was one of the three elements of the Deathly Hallows symbol there. You had the wand and the stone and the, what was the other one, the cape. And he does this. He finds a stone by finding first a ball, the golden ball called the Snitch, that Dumbledore gives to him. And what is the Snitch? It's an Egyptian winged sun that all of the initiates have been chasing. This shows us that the students of the mystery school seek the solar wisdom, which results in the alchemical process of finding the Philosopher's Stone in the form of a black pyramid, which is, of course, the Resurrection Stone. In case you haven't seen it, the Resurrection Stone, it turns out it is, in fact, a black pyramid. Now, the Black Pyramid makes its owner the Master of Death when combined with these other two elements required. So the pyramid is in fact considered the triangle of manifestation, in the sense that life is being brought about just like a magician that would conjure an entity into that triangle drawn on the floor during a ritual incantation. And to seal this symbolic deal, we see the phrase, "I open at the close," scribed on the snitch, which is saying that death is the true path to eternal life for Harry. "I open at the close." That's what it says. Now, after this scene, the camera zooms back into the forest and into Voldemort's all-seeing eye, setting up for the final demonstration of occult doctrine. Harry Potter is now the one, the chosen one, guided by the Kabbalistic light of Dumbledore, Hermes, into the world of the unseen, Hogwarts, And his mission is to defeat the darkness. And he finds his consort of wisdom, the Sophia in Gnosticism, in Ginny Weasley. He now joins the ranks of the dead and the reborn gods. Osiris, Hiram Abiff, Jesus Christ. All of these rebirths were believed to be done with the Gnosis that will liberate all of mankind. That's what these people believe. That's what they believe. The wisdom provided by the Luciferian source of light is to be shared with the masses in a full-blown revelation of the method. And that's it. That's the whole tale. That is the entire Harry Potter saga. Harry Potter reveals the truth to all of the kids while defeating the Death Eaters. And these are, of course, the Gnostic Archons. And the Dark Lord, Voldemort, is revealed as the Demiurge Force. That's God. God in the clouds with the beard, the Christian God, is the evil Demiurge Force. It's the inversion. It's the Gnostic inversion. Up is down, good is evil, evil is good. And the Force was the final barrier to perfection. Listen to what that's saying. I want to repeat it. The Demiurge Force, the Christian God, was the final barrier to perfection. Does that not make sense? Does that not make sense to all of the things that all these occultists have been saying? Jack Parsons, Blavatsky, Bailey, all these people have been obsessed with destroying Christianity. And look, this isn't a pro-Christian message here. I'm not trying to shove the Bible down your throat. I'm just saying, like, this is what their belief system is. They just don't have enough hair in their nuts to say it out loud. They hide it in all the... Oh, the Church of Satan, but we don't really worship Satan. We're just drama geeks, you know. I'm just telling you as it is, okay? They're not out in the open about it. If their Luciferian religion was so great and so good, why don't they tell everybody? If the Freemasons have such a great way of living and the way to perfect man, why is it a secret society? There's no secrets in the Christian church. Maybe in the Catholic church and the Vatican and all that. I'm not a Catholic. I don't know what they get into. I'm definitely not defending the Vatican. I'm just saying in the Bible, it doesn't talk about, like, you know, some of these secrets are only for the priests to know. You just got to watch out for what these people are trying to do. I think they're trying to be sneaky. So in the film, let's wrap this up. You've heard enough. You're disgusted with Harry Potter. My God. You're out ready to join the picket lines out there with the Bible thumpers and the Westboro Baptist Church or whatever they are. And I'm not saying to do that. Look, great movies. I was thoroughly entertained after the first two. The first two sucked. And I thought they were great. Great movies. I'm just saying, you got to know what they're trying to shove into your subconscious, because they're not going to tell you. Let me sum this up. We find out that Harry Potter marries his consort, Ginny, fulfilling the alchemical wedding of the Sophia moon goddess, Ginny, and the sun god, Harry Potter, the dying and reborn sun god, Harry Potter, God's son. S-U-N. And their children represent the Gnostic Trinity of God the Father, Sophia the Mother, and Logos the Son. And you find out that one of the children is named after old Hermes himself, Albus Dumbledore, who is the white light, the Luciferian illuminated light. Harry has, in fact, mastered both the spiritual and material world, completing Joseph Campbell's Hero's Journey monomyth. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Have a great night. That's it. That's the whole thing. Did you like this show? Did you like the topics? Drop that review on iTunes. I'm still reading them. I'm reading them up to 1,000 and then no more. So if you got something to tell me, you got something to say to me, do it there. I can't. You hit me on the socials, which you can do, at Isaac Weishaupt on Instagram. I'm on Facebook. I rarely check it. Twitter at Illuminati Eyes. You can go for that. I can't promise you, guarantee you, I'll respond. I'll read some of them, not all of them. The iTunes reviews I will read up to the first 1,000. So get on there and tell me what you think. I know you're going to say you love it. I know you love it. Drop that 5-star. Help the show out in any way possible. Spread the truth. Spread the knowledge of what they are trying to do to you. Trying to do to us. Trying to do to the masses. Wake your friends and family up. And until next time, stay woke.